The Right Question is supported in part by Humanities Montana, bringing Montanans together to learn and reflect for 40 years, and by listeners like you.
How long have you been writing a poem every day?
I think it's going to be 8 years ago this June. I started trying to write a haiku every day, just as a morning exercise, something to do when I woke up to clear my brain out and try to be creative right when I woke up and start each day that way. And that's been every single day without ever missing a day.
Welcome to The Right Question, a program that features authors from the Western United States. I'm Cherie Newman, talking with poet and social media phenom Tyler Knott Gregson. You've published two books of poetry, All the Words Are Yours, Haiku on Love, and Chasers of the Light, poems from the Typewriter series. And we'll talk about both of them, but first let's hear a little bit about your history. Start with the typewriter in the store.
Sure. Yeah, there's an antique shop in Helena where I live, and it's called Golden Girls Antiques. And it's one of my favorite spots. It's this expansive building, and there's stuff on both floors. And I love old history, and I love collecting things from my home that are from a lot of different eras. And we were in there one day, and there's this big old cat wandering around, and I found this 1927 Remington Rand typewriter, and it must have weighed 50 pounds, and all I really wanted to do was see if the ribbon still worked. And at that point, I was doing a lot of blackout poetry, which are in the first book, and so I had an old book, and the paper was torn out of it, and I had the title sheet, and I just decided, this is a perfect page to see if the ribbon still works. So I fed it in, and that first poem in the book on Chasers of the Light was what came out when I was standing in the antique store. And I loved it, and I think I bought it for like $25 maybe, and it became instantly my favorite way of writing because I didn't have time to think or revise or edit or anything. It was just whatever came out, and it kind of became like a really quick snapshot of how I was feeling at that time. And I knew right there that it was something that I wanted to stick with and I wanted to try to do every day. And so I think that was, gosh, like 1420 some odd days ago without ever missing a day.
Well, it made a really wonderful book.
Thank you.
The first one is Chasers of the Light, Poems from the Typewriter series. And it's not just a book of poetry. Each one of these poems is also an image.
It is.
So how did you make these images?
So that was actually the challenge with this book. I think with Penguin Random House and Perigee, my imprint, it was a risk for them because normal books, you can use the cheaper paper and you can send it through to the typesetter and they print it and it's quick. This, every single page had to be four color because the way I've always done it, to me, I've always collected little snapshots of paper. I've collected scraps and receipts and old book pages. And I always knew that I wanted to keep the poems on those. And so the only way to display that aesthetic was to do it the old-fashioned way. I would type it on the paper, and then I would scan it, and then I would have to go through and crop it and upload it, and I would do it in Photoshop and then get it to my phone and my computer. And so when it came time to do the book, I was insistent that to set it apart from just a normal poetry anthology, I wanted it to display that, and I wanted to show the aesthetic of it. And so luckily they took that risk and they went through and did the four color printing, and I was surprised. I was surprised that they allowed it to happen. So
I think your thousands and thousands of followers on social media probably influenced their decision.
I think that probably had a little something to do with it. Yeah.
What are you up to these days?
I think right about 275 or 76,000 on Instagram, another 350,000, I think, maybe on Tumblr, 40,000 on Twitter, maybe, and then my Facebook page, I think, is right around 80,000, maybe. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people for a Montana kid.
And for poetry.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's what I'm most excited about, is just that it's kind of finding its legs again. And I think for a long time, poetry kind of took a back seat to a lot of other literary forms, and it bummed me out, because I think poetry is so important to showing everybody else how we see the world. And I remember there's a line in that movie Contact, there was the Carl Sagan novel and the movie. And what I love so much was there was a part where they sent her up and she was trying to describe the things that she was seeing. And the first thing she said was, they should have sent a poet. And I always loved that. And it resonated with me, because I do think that poets tend to see the world in a slightly different light. And so it was really interesting and surprising to see that other people agreed. And I'm not quite sure why, but I'm very thankful that they did. I think it's great that poetry is kind of having a resurgence.
Well, because of the internet and social media, it's become a little bit of a performance art.
It has, absolutely. And I think that's, again, why I love that aesthetic, was it became more of an all-inclusive piece rather than, I think a lot of times poetry is hard for people and it seems intangible to people because it's just lines on a page and it doesn't have the same formatting as a novel and it doesn't have chapters. And so it's tough for people sometimes because I think they get bored by it. And I didn't want anything that I wrote to look or feel inaccessible. And I think that might be part of the reason why it's resonated, is for a long time, poetry became this, I don't know, almost this way of creating an elite club, and you know, only certain people could understand what the poet was trying to say. And I think it even became a badge of honor to try to make them opaque. And for me, I thought it was a lot harder to say something simple that everybody could understand, because simple for me is always more challenging and more difficult than ornate and complex and so layered with metaphor and stuff that the only person who really understands it is the poet. I think I wanted to try to do something where people didn't have to be afraid of it. They could read it and say, God, I have felt that way so many times, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense. Part of the magic about you writing a poem every day is that you're writing mostly about relationships and love. And so I was thinking, you must really be monitoring your thoughts all day long, looking for that bit that you can make into poetry.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I almost feel like it's the other way around. I feel like I kind of wander through the world like a 7-year-old child most of the time, and everything excites me, and everything, I don't know why that is, but everything seems brand new, and everything seems shiny and interesting and distracting. And what usually happens is I kind of wander through my days that way, and if this makes any sense, the poetry ends up kind of finding me. I never anticipate it or intend on it, and to be completely truthful, I don't even set out to write the things that I write. It usually, I'll be living my day and a line will find its way into my brain from something I've seen or experienced or wanted to see. And it all starts on that one line. And from there, the poem kind of builds itself above and below. And before I know it, a poem's written. And I think it's that. I think it's being open all day long and being more accessible to the weird things that can find their way into your life. I think that's where the genesis of everything that I do is there. It's just wandering around like a confused toddler, mostly.
Well, as you said, you're open. You haven't closed off your mind and told it we're only looking at this today.
Exactly.
Like you would if you were looking at a spreadsheet all day or something.
Exactly, yes. And I'm lucky enough to have that ability. I get to travel a lot with my job between the books and between... I'm also a photographer. My partner, Sarah, and I travel all over the world shooting weddings and shooting people and, you know, anything that we get contracted out for. And that makes it a lot easier, too, because, I mean, it's hard to not be constantly inspired when you're constantly out of your comfort zone. I think, like you said, if I was sitting at a desk every day looking at a spreadsheet for 8 hours a day, I'm sure those words would be a lot more challenging to find for me, especially day in and day out. But as it happens, we get to travel everywhere and see so many things inside of Montana and out that are just, it's hard to not walk around in wonderment when that's your existence. I feel really lucky.
Mm-hmm. Because you aren't seeing the same thing
exactly
every day, doing the same thing.
Yes. Which is funny because I am kind of a creature of routine. So I feel like I'm always out of my comfort zone, to be honest with you, always. And I think that's where the growth happens. So,
you are a creature of routine in that you write a poem every day.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
certainly.
And I eat the same things for breakfast every day. And I, you know, I have the same kind of tea. And I, 99% of the time, I eat the same dinner every day. And it's funny because of that, that those are the things I can control. And there's not many. With my life, it's constantly in flux. And so the little things that I feel like I can have any modicum of control over, I just grab and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna eat the same thing for breakfast every single day. So at least I know that one thing I'm in charge of.
Well, also you don't have to think about that.
Exactly.
So you can leave your mind open for having these lines come in.
Yeah, there's room. There's always room. And that's another reason why I don't read a lot of the things that I write. I'm always worried that if I read or remember the things that I've already written, it's going to take away space for new things. And so I watch spoken word poets who can get up on stage and read one of their poems that is 5 minutes to read out loud, and they have the whole thing memorized, and I'm just flabbergasted. I have no idea how they do that, because I'm always afraid if I did that, it would create clutter and there wouldn't be as much room for new words to come in. So I'm one of the worst readers of my own poetry ever.
Well, we'll find out in a little while. It seems like every time you post something online or tweet or put something on your Tumblr account or Instagram, you get hundreds of people reacting to it. What does that say to you about what you're writing? Because it's, as I said, it's mostly about relationships.
Sure. It's very inspiring to me. And I get very excited that people care. But the number one thing that I've always taken away from, especially with social media, the thing that's made me feel the most excited and proud is the number one way that people interact with my work is through sharing it with someone that they care about. And I think that's always the most exciting thing, is to see 1,000 people tagging somebody else and saying, look, this is how I feel. And I love that. And I think that goes back to the accessibility that we were talking about. I think it's hard for people to feel understood. And I think that's where any success I've had comes from. They feel understood. If even for 2 minutes reading something, they think, yeah, that I felt that. I get that. That makes sense to me. And then to go forward and share it with someone that they care for, it's wonderful.
And people who aren't writers, you're giving them a way to express themselves.
Yeah. And I think that's a beautiful thought. And it still doesn't really make sense to me, I don't think, but I love it. And it's flattering and humbling. And it's neat to see your words take on a different meaning than maybe I intended them. Because when I write them, I know how I felt when they were written. But it's interesting to see them kind of take on a new life of their own with the people who are interpreting them and then sharing them with someone that matters to them. I think that's really interesting, because you never know what anything you say, and not just me, anyone, you never know what effect you're going to have on the next person, or what effect that'll have on the next person beyond that. And so it's kind of been this really strange social experiment to see that trickle-down effect in real time some of the times. I mean, there's been times where people have conversations back and forth with their significant other through comments on my Instagram, and you can see people apologizing or forgiving themselves or forgiving each other, and that's wonderful. And I think that's so magic that the world is shrinking in that way. I think that's special.
You're listening to The Right Question. I'm Cherie Newman, talking with Tyler Knott Gregson. He's the author of two collections of poetry, All the Words Are Yours and Chasers of the Light. If you'd like to listen to this conversation again or share this program with a friend, it's available as a podcast and at our blog. Links to both are at mtpr.org/twq. You can also get there through our Facebook and Twitter pages. After a short break, we'll be back to talk about Buddhism and the source of poetry in the universe. Stay with us. What part has Buddhism played in your thought process or your writing?
Honestly, in the mindfulness, that's been something that I've been extremely thankful for finding Buddhism, is just that mindfulness, walking through your day and being open and being present in your thought. Because to find enough things to write about for 8 years in a row every day and not trip over yourself by repeating yourself exactly, it's hard. And I think in order to do so, you have to be very mindful of every minute that you're awake and alive. And if you go through your day that way, you find poetry hiding everywhere. I mean, it really is hiding everywhere. And it's just a slight shift of mindfulness that can unlock that door and show it to you. And anybody in my life that I've introduced to Buddhism, I've seen that happen to them. And I've seen them, it's almost like waking up. I've seen them wake up and start seeing things in a way that they didn't know was possible. And it's funny because for me, I'm sitting back and it's the same world. It's the exact same world it was yesterday. You just are seeing more of it. And I think practicing Buddhism and following it for as long as I have, that's what it's shown me, is it's perfectly acceptable to see the whole world as this beautiful miracle and to find the poetry in it. And I think if more people did that, we would have a lot less problems.
Well, I was thinking that writing a poem every day, whether you had the intention to publish it or not, but just noticing the world long enough to write a poem could be the path to world peace.
I absolutely agree. I think
if everybody was busy looking for the poetry,
exactly,
they'd have no time for fighting.
Oh, that's so true. I mean, honestly, being mindful of how many things that go around us that we take for granted that are miracles, and I don't mean miracles in any kind of religious sense. I mean, it's just miraculous, the things that we're able to do and see and have. And I mean, even when you break it down to social media, the ability to hold a phone and look at someone that you love across the world and speak with them. I mean, even things like that, that we are so used to now, that's amazing and that's miraculous. And the fact that it can foster intimacy from thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away, when you break that down to a smaller scale, what can we do when we're 2 feet from each other? And, you know, what is there to notice when we're 2 feet from each other? So, yeah, I think you're right. A poem a day is the shortcut to world peace, for sure.
Do you ever feel like you can't live up to your poems?
I think if I was writing for anyone other than myself, I would feel that way every day, and it would be scary. I've been writing the same way since I had 2 followers, and it was my mom and my dad. I've been doing the same thing and looking at the world the same way my whole life. And if everything went away tomorrow and there was no more book deals and there was no more signings and no more wonderful interviews like this, I would wake up tomorrow and I would write the same poetry and say the same words and feel the same way as I did today. And because of that, I've never felt pressure. I've never felt obligation, because I get asked a lot, are you ever going to stop? And what happens when you stop? I never think beyond that minute when I'm writing that poem. And the fact that there's a ripple effect at all is still a surprising thing to me, but it's never been my motivation. The motivation is just to clear out the clutter in my brain and make room for the next thing that I'm going to notice. And so because of that, I've never thought beyond that. And I think that, again, maybe goes back to the mindfulness and the Buddhism. I'm doing each moment as I do it, and it's the present, and whatever's going to come is going to come, and whatever's gone is gone. And all I can focus on is what's right here. And I mean, I'm sure it's challenging sometimes to not slip out of that. But as far as living up to anything, it's just always been, I'm just doing the best I can usually, and just hoping to get through the day in one piece.
So since you don't go back and read your own poems or pay much attention to them after you've written them, it'd be really hard for me to ask you to choose one to read, right?
It would be. So, I would leave it up to you.
And so I have to be responsible for what you're going to read then.
Yeah, whatever you like.
Let's see.
Or you could be random.
Yeah, I could just not worry about it.
I think that's the key.
Open the book. I'll just hand you the book and you read the page that I opened.
Okay, so this one says, I overheard the man whisper, I am a lover, not a fighter. And to myself I thought, I am in fact both. For is it love at all if it's not worth fighting for?
So what do you think of that now that you haven't seen it since you wrote it?
Yeah, I remember writing that one and I remember the man that said that. And I still feel the same way. I think if it's worth caring about, it's worth fighting to keep. So it's interesting going back and reading these because, like I said, because I don't edit them, they tend to feel like a diary entry for me. And I can't remember the exact day. I don't remember the date I wrote that. I don't remember what number that might have been in the series. But I remember the way it felt that day. And it's so in that, it's if I ever did decide to revisit them, it would be fascinating to see the growth that I've had since then or what stayed precisely the same. And in this case, I feel the exact same way today as I did when I wrote this one. And I think that's interesting because I'm sure there's some in here that if I revisited, I would say, oh man, I feel different now, you know?
What does fighting for something look like in your version of the Buddhist tradition?
Patience. I think, and it's something that comes up on a lot of my question and answers that I do at book signings and stuff. I think patience is the hardest thing to actually practice. And I think because of that, there's this epidemic that has really spread around of people settling and thinking that something is good enough. And I think those are dangerous words. I think good enough is dangerous because it's a trap that once you start falling into it, it spreads. And I think it infects everything around you. And if you go through your life thinking that everything is good enough, you're going to fall short of what you're capable of and what you deserve. And so for me, I think the truest way that you can fight for someone is patience. And it's patience to let them become the people that they need to be and let them find the person that you are in their own time. Because sometimes you meet people and they're not ready to accept the love that you know they deserve, but they haven't figured out yet. And you can either choose. You can choose to walk away and then go settle for something else, or you can choose to be patient and you can wait and show them that they are worth every minute of that wait. So I think fighting is patience. The good kind of fighting is patience.
Normally when we think of fighting, we think of weapons.
We do. I don't. I haven't killed a living thing of any shape or size since I was probably 13 years old, so I even let mosquitoes finish their meal before I usher them off my skin. It's gotten ridiculous, but it's true.
I understand.
Yeah.
Before we sat down to start our interview, you said something about not wanting to read your haiku.
Yeah, I will, though. I absolutely will. I find them more challenging to read because they're so short, which sounds right. So weird.
But I could read it.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
And then you can tell me what you think.
That'd be wonderful. I would love that. I never get that.
Sometimes I want less. Less clothing and less waiting. Less words and less space.
I like that one. I remember writing that one too. It's weird when you read things. I don't ever hear them read back to me. It's an interesting thing. I never get that.
Do you remember what brought that on?
I think it was part of that fighting for the thing you love. It was the feeling of having to wait. And I think we're in a culture where we always want more and we're always trying to figure out how to suck more out of everything. And we forget that there's a flip side to that coin. And sometimes having more when it comes to distance or separation or clothing, sometimes those things are massive hindrances to your happiness. And there are times where I don't want to speak and I don't want to wait. I just want to be and be with the person that I need to be with. And I think in those cases, excess is a curse.
It certainly is when you want to be mobile enough to travel the world and do
Definitely.
Photography. What are some of the jobs you've been on recently?
We've been all over the world. We just signed today or yesterday a wedding in Dubai for this summer, which is a place I never have been or thought that I would go. We were in Jamaica right around Christmas time a year ago. What I think is the most wonderful thing is we've gotten to see little corners of this country that are not places that anybody would look at a map and say, all right, let's go to Burney, Texas this weekend, you know? And I find those places to be so much more exciting and endearing than the big name places. I loved Austin, but I found myself thinking, I liked Burney better. And, you know, there's only probably 8,000 people in Burney, but I felt more at home there than I did in Austin. And I love that. I love that we get to see places that most people would never go unless they're local. And I think that's a really fun way to check out our country. I think it's awesome.
Do you get those jobs through your website and people who find you on social media?
We do, mostly. Yeah. And that's been a really fun kind of cross-reference that has happened. I would say the majority of the jobs we have now are people who found me through the writing and then found our photography work and kind of fell in love with both. And as such, it's been interesting and really fun because we've been able to meet these people who have been following me and supporting me and allowing me to do stuff like this for a long time. And we get to be with them on their happiest day of their, hopefully of their life, and or one of. And it's been really interesting and nice to get to meet people in a lot more of an intimate way too. I mean, being with someone 5 minutes before they walk down the aisle, you see what that person's really made of, because nerves and excitement and tears and all of those things come out. And so, yeah, they find us on Instagram and they find us through our website. And when it works out and it lines up, we're lucky enough to meet them and spend a few fun days with them.
What do you want people to know about you or about writing poetry?
About poetry, I think just that anyone can. Again, hopefully one of the things that's happening with any amount of success that my books have is just that it shows that it doesn't have to be this gated community of complex words and themes that are really hard to grasp. It can be whatever you want it to be. And I think poetry really is more of a way of looking at the world and then trying to describe it rather than a way of describing the world that you're looking at. And so if you change it that way and you make your life about seeking it, the writing of it comes almost naturally. And I think anybody can do it. And I hope everyone tries, because if nothing else, the side effect of that is just seeing the world in that different way. And like you said, maybe that is the secret path to figuring things out on this planet once and for all.
World peace.
World peace.
Through poetry.
Exactly. I feel like Miss America. My platform is world peace. But I think we might be onto something, honestly.
I do too. Get everybody a notebook and a pen.
Exactly.
Or an app on their phone.
Yep. And tell them to act like excited toddlers.
Tyler Knott Gregson lives in Helena, Montana. Look for more information about him at our blog, mtpr.org/twq. Also there, you'll find a weekly poem and children's book reviews, as well as links to our Facebook and Twitter pages. The music you heard during this program was written and performed by John Floridis and Tommy Emmanuel. Thanks for listening. I'm Cherie Newman, wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer. You'll find links to our podcast and Facebook and Twitter pages at mtpr.org.